ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, October 8th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. Today, Dwayne, it is the Montreal Impact's press conference, the post-mortem wrapping the season. It is going on right now, so I cannot fortunately be there. I'm in the studio, obviously. We're live. But we're going to do our own little wrap-up. But before we do that, we're going to talk about Europe. But how you doing today?
I'm doing well. And another quick note before we get really going. Paul James, former Canadian men's international player who has struggled with addiction for years, has been on the streets. He has been reported as missing. Police are concerned for his safety. So if you're in the Toronto area or the Ottawa area where he may also be, and you've had contact with Paul in the last few days, please reach out to law enforcement there to let them know whatever information you can.
Well, here I'm going to read the press release, and I think it's really important. As you can see on your screen, this is a recent picture of Paul James, the one used by the Toronto Police. The Toronto Police Service is seeking the public's assistance locating a missing man. Paul James, 56, lived in the Toronto area, but may also be in the Ottawa area. He is described as 5'8", 167 pounds, medium build, and with brown hair. Police are concerned for his safety and well-being. Anyone with information is asked to contact police at 416-808-3100. Crime Stoppers anonymously at 416-222-TIPS, T-I-P-S, 222-8477. You can also go online at 222tips.com and the Facebook Leave a Tip page, or text TOR and your message to Crimes. Download the free Crime Stoppage mobile app on iTunes, Google Play. Please, if you do have information or more on this, if you have seen Paul in the soccer world over the last few days or weeks, please contact the Toronto Police again, once again, at 416-808-3100.
Yeah, and that's not much more to say to that. Obviously, Paul James had a storied career for the Canadian men's national team. As I said, his issues are well known. It doesn't mean that you still don't try to assist him, even though he has turned down help a lot in the past. But nonetheless, you continue to offer it for as long as he is here, and hopefully he'll be found safe. On that note, Kevin, let's move forward.
Let's move forward. Let's talk about the beautiful game in England this weekend. Let's talk about Brighton Tottenham, and Tuesdays are for Europe. The early game on Saturday with a shocking result. How does Mauricio Pochettino still have a job on Tuesday morning?
Well, I mean, the success in the past is really the answer to that. It's a difficult decision if you're Spurs to let go of your most successful manager, really, of you know, the last 25, 30 years. Certainly a man who just less than 6 months ago had taken Spurs to almost to the pinnacle of European competition, to the pinnacle of European competition, didn't quite get over the hump there that day, of course, but to the Champions League final. And now it sort of crashed and burned. And most people are speculating and observing, really, that he probably should have walked away at that point, because, you know, there comes a point in any manager, in the modern manager player relationship sort of cycle, that they start to lose effectiveness. And perhaps when you look at the sort of the speculation in the offseason that perhaps he would be take the Real Madrid job, he's been linked to a lot of high profile jobs, he stayed at Spurs. It's, you know, we don't know. No one is inside anyone else's brain, but it does seem like perhaps he is not all in it anymore. Emotionally has sort of, you know, you can understand, had a letdown after losing that Champions League final. It's hard to get geared back up to reach heights that you've already been to. And it seems difficult if you're in Spurs' position to get any higher than you are. You're sort of at that sort of, you're bumping your head on the ceiling right now in terms of the capabilities of the club. It seems difficult to push through that. particularly when there are, you know, bigger jobs that may become available. I mean, Real Madrid's turned it around a little bit in recent days, although not so much in the Champions League. And
Manchester, you know, United's going to need a manager soon. So
yeah,
so
maybe, well, is that an upgrade?
Is that an upgrade or is that a sideways move? That's true. But when you do combine the 7-2 defeat 2 weeks ago in the Champions League with this 3-0 defeat in the league, you do see yourself looking at Tottenham in difficulty, struggling in the Premier League. Let's continue. Norwich, Aston Villa, big win for Aston Villa. That's what I'm talking about. Norwich had a famous win this year already over Manchester City. And Aston Villa on the road, winning a 5-1 at Carrow Road to when they beat Norwich. The other result I want to talk about, Dwayne, of course, is Man City. Of course, Liverpool won against Leicester, so 2-1 there. And Man City lost 2-0 at home against Wolves, finding themselves 8 points. At least, well, Liverpool is 8 points clear on top, so already a gap. Is the title race over already, Dwayne?
8 points on its own, no, particularly when you consider that there's 6 points to be held between the two teams. However, when you look at the nature of the two games yesterday, it is hard to see a scenario in which Liverpool drops the amount of points needed to allow and City to be remain consistent enough to not be vulnerable in the same way they've been vulnerable twice now to dropping more points themselves. So basically, you're at a point in the season where City would need to be nearly perfect and win both games against Liverpool. I would give the latter a chance. I think City will get up for those games, and obviously, as the talent they have, will obviously be in both. So I could see City winning both the Liverpool games, but right now, unless there's a significant improvement in the backline of City, and that is, you know, I'm not a genius here to point this out, the vulnerability of this, the vulnerability of any Pep team really is he doesn't really. He selects defenders for their abilities in an attacking way, in a possession oriented way, not necessarily in a defending way.
Right? Oh, yeah, Claudio Bravo. I remember that. Yeah, he used to, you're right? That's the idea of it, and too, and defenders, too. Where defenders that are used in a system to play from the back, to be able to start the movement of the ball, to start the vision and the progress in the field with the ball, but in control, a lot is asked on the defenders, and a lot of this that are the task that they're asked to do, it's not defending oftentimes, and it does make their job a bit more complicated. That's the idea of a system a little bit too.
Yeah, and look, the game against Wolves was, 70% possession, like you'd expect, and City was creating some chances, but not great chances. Wolves was defending very well, very deep in the box. Wolves is a very tall team. I mean, let's take this down to its very basics. City kept
whatever works.
Yeah, and they were packing the box, and City kept trying to put balls in. De Bruyne wasn't available. Now, when De Bruyne's there, he can open up defenses and open up those things. He's so key to their play. If he's not playing, then suddenly they need to break down the teams in another way, and they just weren't able to get it. I think there's a bit of a burnout almost. City's has 198 points over the past two seasons.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, and it's a lot of concentration. You think about that from any job performance standpoint. There comes a point when you've been doing the same thing over and over again. It's hard to maintain that level, even when you are incredibly skilled at what you do. And that I think, is a bit of what's happening to City. On the other side of this, Kevin, too, is you mentioned briefly Leicester-Liverpool on Saturday morning. That was one of those games that absolutely should have been points dropped for Liverpool. If you watched it, Leicester was at least equal play in the game
last week too, though. That's 2 weeks in a row. Anyways, continue.
Yeah, and well, they got a penalty in stoppage time. Now the penalty was deserved. It was a penalty, but it was a complete cluster at the back. Leicester decided to. There was kind of a miscommunication. Schmeichel didn't quite know what to do. He kind of came into no man's land. The defender, instead of booting it into Rosette, decided to make a little cute thing, and then suddenly Liverpool has possession in the box, and they make a sloppy tackle, and it's a penalty in the 94th minute. Like, ridiculous, right? It's amazing if you're a Liverpool fan, but it's not something that should have happened from Leicester's perspective. But that what this says to me is there's a couple things. Look, Liverpool benefits from a lot of mistakes. They do. Part of that is because they're very good, and they're very relentless in how they pressure. So if you're constantly pressuring defenses, you're going to force errors. And the fact that they happen late is a reflection of how tired you are at that point. You're mentally tired, you're physically tired. You've been still being harassed by the press of Liverpool. It makes sense that you're going to give up more chances late. I mean, as much as it kills me to say this, this is what Fergie time was, right? It wasn't necessarily that they were getting benefit from the officials or gods or whatever you want to think. It was that they were constantly pressuring teams, and to the point that, you know, they got extra time, they would benefit from mistake and they would pounce on it. And that's what's happening with Liverpool right now. And I don't believe, as anyone who's heard me, in destiny and luck, like even luck, if luck exists. I don't believe in bad luck or good luck. There's just luck in a generic sense. It goes both ways. But
I don't believe in the fortune of a team that accumulates good luck week in and week out. Luck is independent in its own definition by themselves, game by game, I guess.
Yes, exactly. But what I do believe is in confidence and in belief. And Liverpool clearly has the confidence and the belief that they can find results even when things aren't going their way right now. And that is why they are benefiting from good luck right now, because they keep that pressure up. And it is difficult to see them dropping points, as I said, combined with City winning out. And so that makes it's very early to be calling the title race over. And I'm not going to do that because I've seen it. Like City, the other part of this too is City has rolled teams in more than once from many points down. They were 7 points down or 6 points down in 2012, got the title. They were multiple points down in last year, got the title. So they've done it before. So they will have that belief themselves. But there does seem to be something a little bit more, seems to be a little bit more edge, a little bit more focus on Liverpool's side of the agenda right now. And less. Something happens to shake that confidence in the near future, then I think maybe it most definitely is Liverpool's to lose at this point. And that doesn't mean that City's not going to have a good season. I mean, they're too talented not to. And obviously the Champions League is more of their focus, and they are perfect to start that competition right now. And the further Liverpool pulls ahead, the more City, I think, will put their resources in there. And hell, we may see a reversal of last season. And I think that would satisfy both sets of fans in the same way that it kind of did last year, too.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how quick Manchester City does reel in Liverpool, if they do or not. And that could change. Of course, two other big results we're not going to dwell on. We'll move from Tuesday's Are for Europe. We have a little shorter show today. But, man, Manchester United losing 1-0, that was another big surprise. Newcastle, great goal, a great lead up to the goal, I have to say. The control of the defender in Manchester United box of the Newcastle player, the great layoff pass and a good goal. But, of course, my Chelsea won as well, 4-0 against Southampton. So, a couple of good results. Arsenal getting a win, that's surprising, I guess, for 2019, But that's your weekend in the Premier League, and Tuesdays are for Europe, Dwayne.
Yeah. Man United is 2 points out of the relegation zone right now.
Ouch.
I'm not saying that. Well, I am a little bit saying that. I'm pointing that out for gleefully, but I'm not, you know, suggesting they're going to be into that race. But when you talk about United as being a club that's contending, you have to factor that in. They're not right now. They are amongst Wolves, Sheffield United, Brighton. That is who they're battling with right now. Bournemouth is 2 points ahead of them. Like, that's where they are. And by virtue of Newcastle, as much as we've talked about how bad Newcastle's been, they are 1 point behind United this season right now after 8 games. That is not something that I think we ever thought would happen. Everton is in the drop zone right now. The bottom right now is as crazy as the championship top is in terms of who's going down. I mean, it's a wild, wild race. Other than Watford and their 3 points, there's no one that's really adrift right now.
No, exactly. Well, Wolves got a big one, but we'll see. And I'm still surprised to see Wolves and Watford in that position. I figured they were going to be a top 10 team, not a relegated team, and I think there's still time for that to change. Speaking of reeling teams, I do feel Watford and Wolves will reel in teams and finish closer to 10th than in the drop zone. But it's something to follow for next Tuesday with the weekend and the week of games this week, Dwayne. But it's Tuesday, 2 days after the end of the regular season. And at the training center of the Montreal Impact today is, well, right now, it's the closing season wrapping press conferences with the players and Wilmer Cabrera and other staff members. When you think, and of course, I'll let you ask me a question in a second, of course, how would you sum up the season of the Montreal Impact? Because there's two ways to look at it. No playoffs, but a trophy.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I gave you a couple questions to consider earlier this morning. I didn't ask you what the high point of the season would be for the Impact, so I don't think there's any question what it is. It's winning the Voyageurs Cup and particularly getting the result against Toronto in that. I mean, the funny thing, what I would say, if I had to qualify the Impact season in one word, I think the word I'd use is uneven. It tends to trend a little bit towards the negative because of the way they finished. But you think about even the Voyageurs Cup run, they weren't particularly impressive in it. I mean, they scraped by York 9, but it still ended up with a victory at the end. So that's what they're going to focus on. So that's what I would qualify it as. And obviously you look at the firing in there. You look at just the fact that they failed to move up a position. They dropped a position from where they finished last year. It's got to be a disappointing season, but particularly there were times in the early part where we thought that they were going to pull up and be. I mean, I listened to our preseason predictions yesterday for the show, and we were very. I wouldn't say we were high on the Impact, but we were hopeful for the Impact, is how I'd put it. And they didn't live up to expectations, and that's so where I come down on this. It has to be overall. You know, this is a D-plus season, right? It's not even a C season. They went down. I mean, the Voyageurs Cup is the funny thing about the Voyageurs Cup, Kevin, when you have a bad season, I have a lot of experience with this from a Toronto perspective.
Yes.
When the Voyageurs, and what I'd always used to say, because there were people in Toronto that would like hold on to this and say, well, how can we be unsuccessful? We won this cup. I'm like, well, then how come there were 12,000 people in the stands? It's like, how come they're not selling tickets like hotcakes? Like, come watch your Voyageurs Cup defending champion TFC. No, they're not doing that. And no one in Montreal is going to be, other than the hardcore, other than the bubble, is going to be all that moved by this. They're going to look at a failure to make the playoffs is what it's going to be. But you tell me how you would classify the Impact season.
It's a good question, Dwayne. You mentioned D, and I don't disagree. D minus even. F, failure, I don't know. That's where you have to look at it. I do always look at Major League Soccer, the regular season, as one thing, and the Canadian Championship as another. Because there's no correlation between the two. Of course, there is in the roster and how you pick a team, because you have a lot of tough choices sometimes roster-wise because of the final at the same time as the playoff race. But for me, they're two separate competitions, because they are. And I'm going to judge the regular season of the Montreal Impact and not the Canadian Championship run. I'll judge the run in a different way, because it does need a different perspective. But the Major League Soccer season, it's a failure. For me, it's an F. Why? Look at the second half of the 2018 season. The progress of the Montreal Impact last year. How they played. How they almost made the playoffs with their push last year. Not like this year, where they had a good amount of points and it's throughout the season that it went downhill. Last year, it was a growth. It was constant growth year in, day in, day out last year. At the end of the season, the Impact were getting better, Dwayne. And it didn't materialize. This year, you didn't continue that growth. There was stability in the offseason with the Impact. You would expect a certain amount of growth. Of course, there was injuries. Nacho Piatti, not just any other player, your best player, maybe your best player in history, and one of the top five players in Major League Soccer in the last 5 years, missed pretty much most of the season due to injury. So it does give you not as much option. It does as also give you many, many headaches, because how do you fit? How do you surprise? How do you change that formation? How do you change the way you play, because the way you play is a bit based of what your best player can bring you. And it was not going to be the case this year. You mix that with transfers that some of them were useful. Lapalainen got two good games in this year would have been better, a bit more consistency. And I think that's one of the big things the Impact were missing this year. It's consistency on the starting 11 side, consistency on the results side, consistency on the defense side, consistency on the goal scoring side. Consistency was missing for the Montreal Impact in 2019.
When I look at the Impact's line in the standings, there's a number that jumps out at me, Kevin, and it's the number 60. They let 60 goals.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And if it wasn't for FC Cincinnati breaking all-time records, they would have had the worst defensive record in the East. As it is, it's the third worst defensive record in the league. Now, there were a couple really sideways results in there that skew that a bit, but it's still something that I think needs addressed. It's funny because we talked all year about TFC's defensive frailties, right?
They're better than Montreal.
We didn't talk as much about the Impact, and the Impact actually allowed 8 more goals than TFC's. So is that the area that they really need to address in the offseason?
Well, there's two areas that they really need to address. And one of them, yes, is defenders. It's central defenders. We saw what Rod Fenny did for the back line when he played the few games he did late in the season. He should have been there all along. They should have found a way to make that work. But no, because of Harry Novillo, because of other situation earlier this year, which Harry Novillo, we're going to have to make a documentary show about his tenure, his short presence in Major League Soccer, what a failure that thing was. And not necessarily, I wouldn't recommend any team he retired, but good for him, because I don't think any team wants to take him now after his frasque here and what he did across the pond too. But yeah, a defender, but also goals. The Montreal Impact needs goals. It's crazy what happens when you score more than one goal a game. Yeah, you win more than you lose. So sometimes it's good to reassure the defense, because you're not going to win any championship conceding 61 goals, but you're not going to win any by not scoring over 62. So you do need to score goals. And of course, Nacho Piatti, not only is his presence uncertain for next year, injuries have started to take his toll, and you need to build around him and build maybe around somebody else with a Nacho Piatti. Then your team becomes a bit more, I would say, consistent. If you bring in someone a bit younger and he becomes your main guy and you have Piatti supporting that would be an amazing, amazing idea for 2020. We'll see if that happens. So Montreal might need goals. Does that take the shape of a striker that actually produces like a striker should in Major League Soccer, 10 to 20 goals? That's all I'm asking for. Or find those goals somewhere else on the pitch. But yeah, defenders, or reassure the back line, and goals.
Well, you know, I pointed it many, many times before. If you look at, historically speaking, in Major League Soccer, the teams that win championships generally have the best offensive talent in the league and a mid-level defensive talent. It's the old adage, the defense wins championships, is overstated, particularly in Major League Soccer. You've got to score, as you say. There's another issue that jumps out too. The other number I will point out before I ask you a couple direct questions is 6, and that's the amount of losses they had at Saputo. No team in the playoff has even equaled 6 home losses. So what do they have to do to sort of be more dominant to take advantage of a home advantage in Montreal?
Well, it's going to sound weird. I don't think it has anything to do with the playing at home or playing on the road. I think it's the entire year this year. The lack of depth of the Montreal Impact was felt all along. Multiple times we've heard, and that's for his entire tenure in Montreal, Rémi Gallet saying, I want to, because he's been criticized by the media, I want to go to my bench, I want to bring somebody else in, but I have to be confident that that change, that substitution, that player coming into the game is going to affect the game, change the game for the better. And he did not have that confidence. We looked at Wilmer Cabrera earlier on in his tenure in Montreal too, and the same thing was happening. The lack of depth of the Montreal Impact really gives handcuffs, I guess, the managers. Because of, well, financial reasons, the Montreal Impact have the 6th biggest salary cap. Well, the salary budget, whatever. The cost of the team.
Spending
is 6th in the league. And look at the results. Look where they finished. Look over the last couple of years. A lot of money have been wasted on players. Some of them are good to play in this league. Rudy Camacho is a good defender in this league. Is he worth $800,000, $700,000? That's where the problem lays. And I think that affects everything else that we've seen. And the death for me, the depth of this team has been the death of this team. The lack of, and the lack of confidence for the young kids. I think it shows a lot. And I think it's also, and that's something that it's hard for a sports team to do. But it's not about what have you done for me before. It's not. It's not like, oh yeah, you're a legend of this club. You're amazing. You've been here for a long time. We need to keep you. Or you've done good services for the club. We need to pay you. It's unfortunate, but you live in a salary cap world. And a salary cap world, it's about value. And value is not determined by, oh, you played really well for me the last 5 years, you scored a bunch of goals, so I'm going to pay you next year because of what you did the last four. Unfortunately, it's not. It's about, I'm trying to be a Scrooge here. I'm trying to give you the less amount of money I can because what I'm saving, I can put it on somebody else and have two good players instead of one great and one terrible. So it's juggling those two mentalities that this is difficult for general managers and technical directors. That's why there's a lot of work for Olivier Renard in the next few months. But I do feel it's the depth of this team, the missing, the lack thereof, which created a lack of consistency. I saw maybe their best 11 play last Sunday in the last game of the season due to, well, everyone was back from injury finally. Oh, hey, it's October. The season's over. It's about damn time.
Yeah, final on the record. They had one more win than the New England Revolution.
That's it.
17 losses. Oof. If they can turn four or five of those losses into draws, which I think is maybe a product of the depth, then you're talking about the impact as a playoff team. But but that's the difference, right? It's well, what, it's what's those losses into draws.
How do you change a loss into a draw? One of the best ways to do so, Dwayne, is you sub in an offensive player at the 72-minute with great legs, and he runs at the defenders, and he gets the advantage, he gets a favorable one-on-one, and he finishes clinically. That's what was missing. The death on the bench, and someone that could finish clinically throughout the starting 11. So, exactly, that's why there's 17 losses and not 2-3 draws saved in all those games, because they didn't have that. They didn't have your super sub, your old Chris Wondolowski coming off the bench and scoring a goal when you needed, and another example that we can find in Major League Soccer. No Tobias was to be in Montreal this year.
Fair enough. All right, let's ask you some direct questions. I asked you to, we've been negative for the most part because it's hard to not be negative when you miss the playoffs, but we'll start with the positive. What, in your mind, was the biggest positive of a Montreal Impact's 2019 season? It could be a player, it could be a moment, other than the Voyageurs Cup, I'm taking that off the table. Okay. It could be a player, it could be a moment, it could be whatever you want.
Well, to go up, you have to go down first. To change and to realize something is sometimes a good learning process, which leads to a better future, hopefully, if you learn from what you have learned. So if you learn from your mistakes, the arrival of Kevin Gilmore, last off season president, and a president that is not the owner of the club, so gives him at least one degree removed of the wallet. So it does affect your decision mentality a bit different. And you can see the need of a club. When I say the club is the entirety of the Montreal Impact, the infrastructure needed, he could see the needs there. But if you win all the time, you try to convince your owner that you need to do change. When you still win, you bare minimum, blah, 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 everything works, you're making money, why not? The Impact never made money, so it's not about that. They had some good results in the past, but to change a mentality, to change an identity, or to create an identity that has not existed, to create a culture, to create a club with a heart, with soul, to do that, you need sometimes to strip it all down and build it in a way that is a bit more streamlined. And for me, that's what this year will serve as a positive. It made realize to Kevin Gilmore. He realized that, yeah, he probably realized it in the offseason, but he realized seeing in his own eyes in action this year, the structure we had is not streamlined to produce results. in Major League Soccer without bandaging those results with great DP players and a lot of money, TAM and money, which for me are bandages. TAM and DPs should be the bonus. They're the cherry on top of your sundae to make your sundae that much better. They're that little layer of icing on top of your very moist cake to make your cake even better. That's what a DP is. That's what a TAM player should be. They should be used to continue to enhance your identity that you've thought you should have, and you seek the DP or a TAM player that would fit that role. Nothing like this has ever been done with the Montreal Impact. They got the players that they could have, and they tried to mismatch players and teams and identity and coaches all from different parts of the world, which is all good, but not with the same necessarily mentality or vision and direction, which led to multiple try and errors, trials and a lot of tries and a lot of errors from multiple coaches, multiple technical directors to multiple core of players. Now, it might be time to identify what you want to be and then identify the ways, the action to become that, and then you supplement that with a TAM and a DP, and maybe you got yourself a playoff team in 2020. And that's what Kevin Gilmore and especially Olivier Renard will have to do in the offseason. So that's the positive. The realization that this needs to be done has happened.
You need to find a 2020 version of Justin Mapp. Someone like
Justin Mapp, bring him back. I saw him play a few weeks ago. He still got it, you know.
There you go. Okay. So that's you said off the top who the most valuable player by the club's reckoning was. Would you share that view, or would you have your own MVP for the Impact this year?
Well, with the lack of other choices, I kind of don't have a choice. But it's either him or Safir Tider. I would give to. Doesn't mean that they were perfect. Doesn't mean that they were the ideal players for the Impact this season. Doesn't mean that, no. But with lack of other candidates jumping out of the page, I guess Okonkwo would have to do it for me. Okonkwo does need consistency. For the small part of the press conference I saw of Wilmer Cabrera before starting the show, he was talking about players like Okonkwo. Needs more consistency. Saying, look at a Carlos Vela since joining Major League Soccer and LAFC, how consistent he has been. You need this in your big-name players to be a super good team in this league, which is not false. So that's something that would still ask Okonkwo to have more as consistency. But for the lack of other choice, I would give it to Okonkwo as well. But Defender of the Year is no doubt for me, Bakary Sagna. I would have loved to see Zachary Brogaard more. I would love to see Arad Fanny here all year long, maybe who would want it. But of course, Sagna, one of the only stable part of the defense this year. Of course, there's been time here and there where Zachary Brogaard played, and that's great. He's one of the great young right back right now in Major League Soccer, but in the world of football too. He's very young and he's very talented, so that's a great product to have. But I do agree, Bakary Sagna, Defender of the Year and outstanding player, would go to Okonkwo.
All right, so let's go the opposite. They don't, you know, teams are not going to name their most disappointing player or their most disappointing moment or whatever. But if you had to narrow it down to one thing, well, let's ask both. What's the most disappointing player and what's the most disappointing moment overall of the season?
Well, the moment would be the Kansas City game, I guess, or the Cincinnati game a few weeks ago in Montreal. The two Cincinnati games, to be fair, were quite disappointing for the Impact, two losses. So I guess that and the Kansas City drought, the big defeat. The most disappointing player, it's easy to say Harry Novillo because of his outside the pitch behavior and for his behavior on the pitch. But for me, a disappointing player, it's unfortunate and it's not even his fault. And disappointing player doesn't mean that it has to be the fault of the guy, but it's Nacho. It's unfortunate. And it's unfortunate that it's him because of injuries. He's the most disappointed player, and he probably feels the same way. He's probably the most disappointed of us all. And that's a shame, but that's what it is too. Not only the injuries, he had two cortisone shots in his knees this season to try to come back in time. And maybe the wanting and the I wouldn't say the club pressured him, not at all. And that's not what I'm trying to insinuate at all. What I'm saying is, when you're injured and you want to play, you're going to push yourself to come back. And sometimes you push yourself a little harder. You try a little too much and you get another injury and another injury. And that's a little bit the road Nacho Piatti went on this year. And that's disappointing. It's not his fault. And I don't blame him one bit. It's unfortunate. And it is also disappointing. So I have to go with Nacho Piatti.
All right. To wrap up, I'm going to ask you three very rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So just answer with a yes, no here. All right. So first question, Nacho, is he in Montreal next year?
Yes. Less than 2 million.
All right. Piatti, same question. Piatti.
Piet this time. Okay, so Piet.
Piet, pardon me. Yeah.
Piet, he's back, and he deserves a raise.
Cabrera.
Wilmer Cabrera is not back next year for the Montreal Impact.
All right, and where do you think that they'll look? You know, I'm not expecting you to name a name because that's the world's too big. But
well, I have where, one, but it's not my
an idea. An okay. idea of where the coach will come from.
Belgium. is that a fair shot with the new the sporting director Olivier Renard having a lot of former colleagues in Belgium? And I'll even give you a name, and I have to say thank you to Mathias Van Alst, host of Coup Franc, a French podcast about the Montreal Impact, and also writing for Impact Soccer, and Eric Chanois of VO Park. They told me Yakovic is a coach right now in Belgium. Maybe he could be a potential coach here in Montreal. That's a name they told me. So Yakovic.
All right. So it's impossible to have a great evaluation of where teams are going to be next year. So I'm not expecting you to answer questions of whether they're in the playoffs next year or not. That we can't do that till February. But are you, as right now, do you feel hopeful or not hopeful about next year in a general way?
I feel hopeful because I'm that way, but also because problems that I thought weren't identified before in the Montreal Impact front offices seem to have been identified. Now, the moves to rectify those missing people, missing jobs, missing infrastructure, missing key VP of marketing, there's none of that. Come on, never was replaced. So a few of those were missing and are deeply needed. And that realization has happened. So I'm hopeful because of this. But they still need to hire the right people, or at least people. Put hands there first and then maybe hire somebody else that's better, but get someone there. So for me, that realization seems to have taken place this year in 2019. So it does give me hope for 2020.
And of course, the Montreal Impact will start 2020 off with the Champions League, a right that they earned by beating TFC in the Voyageurs Cup final. So that is something for Impact fans to look forward to yes. next. They can look forward next to cheering against TFC, which is one of their favorite hobbies. And then they got the Champions League to do for that. So there you go, Kevin. Lots to look forward to.
Lots to look forward to in a very short off season, because mid-February things will start to be serious for the Impact. And we'll keep an eye on the off season for sure. And we'll keep an eye on tomorrow's show, where Don and I will be back to talk about the Vancouver Whitecaps tomorrow. We'll wrap up their season and look at their offseason that seems to be as busy as the Montreal Impact. We have to go for today. We thought we were going to do a short show, but you know, that never happens. Dwayne Rollins at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larame, and this show at Soccer Today SPN. Support us at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. And we'll be back tomorrow with the world of soccer. World of football with a soccer perspective. Have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.